Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN SC. I'm Dan Thomas. Later on in the show, Gab Marcotti and Stuart Robson will be here to reflect on AC Milan extending their lead at the top of the table. Zlatan with both goals in their victory on Monday. We start off, though, in the Premier League. Arsenal move to the top 10, ladies and gentlemen. What a moment. After a 3-0 win over Newcastle, Aubameyang with a brace, Saka as well getting the goal. Mark Ogden, Stevie Nicol and Don Hutchinson with us. Stevie, what do you say? Arsenal good, Newcastle very bad. That's pretty much it, isn't it?
Very difficult to argue with that, Dan, to be honest with you. Arsenal, yes, they look good, and I think particularly Sacco and the kid Smith-Rowe, and I've got to tell you, I love watching Smith-Rowe. He's an absolute throwback. You know, you see all these kids coming through the academies these days, and they're all lean and mean and fit and look the part. And then you get this kid, he looks like somebody who's chapped on the door and said, can I have a trial? And all of a sudden they went, wow, where was this guy? So I just love watching him. And he's, as I said, he's a throwback. He pops up in all kinds of places, always on the move. I mean, he looks like a veteran already.
A job done for Arsenal today. You can ask much more from them, could you, Don?
No, they were good, especially second half. First half, you thought it was going to be one of them games again, but just looking at that graphic, yeah, I've no idea how Newcastle expected goals, not 0.2, because they were awful, Newcastle. No wins in 9 in all comps. Mm. They never looked like scoring. And it was just another horrendous watch. I mean, Geordie's are getting very impatient now with what's happening with Steve Bruce and what's happening with the ownership, and it's just a constant story that just won't go away. But that performance tonight was yet another horrendous one.
From an Arsenal's perspective, what is a good season for them now, Mark, considering how badly they started? Question marks, of course, surrounding Arteta. What is their main goal?
Well, it's such an open league this season, isn't it? Nobody's really kind of pulled clear. It's still very tight. I still think they can aim to qualify for the top six. I think the top four might be beyond them, but I think it's been such a strange season that if Aubameyang starts on a roll after his goals tonight, who knows? I mean, Arsenal could make headway and get into the top six. But I do think that anything outside the top six or the top seven, the European places, would be a bad season. It's still left them to retrieve. And I think, you know, one big thing is that Mesut Ozil is out of the club now. That's one kind of distraction they've got rid of. There's no more throwing stones from his social media account at the club. So I think that's a good distraction out of the way. They can concentrate on what's there now. So I do think they can kick on and finish top seven.
They're all chasing, though, of course. Manchester United at the top of the table, remaining top after that goalless draw at Anfield against Liverpool. Mark, it's the first time we've had you on for a while. You have been one of the harshest critics of United over the last couple of years. All doom and gloom surrounding the club. How did you get it all so wrong?
Well, it's just taken time, hasn't it? It was a lot of doom and gloom not so long ago. It was exactly a year ago they went to Anfield and lost 2-0, and then they lost to Burnley, and it looked really bleak. And, you know, Bruno Fernandes came in and things have turned around. And, you know, even this season we've had the 6-1 defeat at home to Tottenham, but they've turned things around. The defence is a lot more solid now. That Solskjaer's kind of settled on 12 or 13 players that he can trust. But I do think that yesterday at Anfield, or on Sunday at Anfield, they looked like a team that went there believing they could get a result. And I've not seen that at Anfield with the United team for about 4 or 5 years now. They went there, they weren't intimidated by Liverpool. And I think that they obviously had chances to win it. The one thing I would say about United is that they need a centre-forward who they can rely on. I think Marcus Rashford looked out of his depth at centre-forward on Sunday. He doesn't know how to stay on side, can't hold his runs. Cavani came on for the last half an hour and showed what a centre-forward should do, but the problem with Cavani is he's 33, he can't play every game. And I just think that was a real kind of highlight yesterday, that if United had a proper centre-forward, a real kind of world-class centre-forward, they'd have won that game yesterday and they would be the favourites to win the league.
Don, just picking up on the point that Mark made, saying that United looked like they were going there and they felt they could get something from the game, that point seems to have been argued by some. Paul Ince coming out and talking about the fact that Jose Mourinho went to Anfield and did something very similar, parking the bus and just trying to catch them on the counter-attack. Is that basically what United did yesterday?
No, I don't think so. I think the team talk and the message from Ollie to the players would have been, you know how Liverpool started Anfield, they'll start fast. Be prepared for the first half an hour of the game, which panned out exactly how Ollie thought. Make sure you keep a clean sheet. At half-time, I thought United would have come in at half-time being delighted with a clean sheet, because they knew in the second half Liverpool might just fade away and sort of run out of ideas, which is exactly what happened. Then I thought United grew into the game and tried to win the game. I thought a draw was the fair result, but I thought it was a different performance from United than Spurs. I thought Spurs were clutching on for long periods of the whole game, where United just had, I don't know, 30, 35 minutes to deal with. Second half, of Liverpool were very, very flat.
Mark, I feel every time that we're on, we talk about Pogba and what things are like in the dressing room and whether Ollie's got all the support. That seems to have changed, is that fair, over the last few weeks?
Yeah, I don't think there's any question that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's got the support of the squad. I think he's definitely got that. And I think the big question is always about Pogba, you know, will he stay, will he go? And I think it's 6-7 weeks now since his agent said that he wanted to leave. And ever since he said that, Mino Raiola, Pogba's been fantastic. He's played really well. He, Liverpool away, Burnley away, he's turned up, he's made a contribution. And I think the view at United is that if Pogba can stay like this, if he cuts out the flashy stuff which he has done, make United a challenger again, maybe he'll want to stay at United. If United are competing for trophies, then he wants to be winning trophies and he wants to be earning big money. So at the moment in the pandemic, Man United look like they can certainly offer the money. And in terms of challenging for trophies, they're getting there. So maybe Pogba can have a future at United. But also the flip side is, do United want to keep him? And he's one of the best players when he plays. So I think, yes, they do. It's just about where they go in 6 months' time. But I think right now they're in a good place together, which is the first time I've been able to say that for a long time.
Meanwhile, Don, three games without a goal for Liverpool. Why can't they score?
Good question. I think there's lots of players for Liverpool out of form, and it's not just the front three. Trent's having a bad time. Andy Robertson didn't particularly have a good game. The knock-on effect, I think, from taking Jordan Henderson out of midfield and playing him centre-half is having a real impact. When you think of Liverpool, you know, in their pomp, they have midfield players like Gina Van Alden, like Fabinho, like Jordan Henderson, to win the ball back, do the dirty work, give it straight to the strikers in the front three, you know, relatively quickly. Now I think it's just taken a little bit of an age. I think Thiago had a great game, great home debut, and I'm not going to say a but the football seems a little bit slower, and that's the knock-on effect from Jordan Henderson and Firmino playing back a position than playing centre-half. But, you know, Mo Salah's been missing. I think Liverpool are carrying him at the moment, and if Diego Jota was fit, I'm pretty sure Mo Salah wouldn't be in the side because his form's terrible at the moment. He'll bounce back, and so will Mane, and so will Firmino. But they just look a little bit stale to me, and I'll be surprised if Jurgen doesn't go in the window and try and add something somewhere, whether that's obviously a centre-half or just something different that's going to offer the squad some freshness.
We'll talk about possible transfers in a minute, Dom, but what is it about Salah? I've seen your tweets that gets under your skin more than any other player.
It just, me and Stevie just watch him, and he doesn't do the basics very well. When Liverpool are trying to build up and you get the ball quickly to Mo Salah, he can do the most outrageous thing and score ridiculous amounts of goals and quality of goals. I'm thinking more last season in the Champions League. But then he can give a five-yard pass away, then the whole move breaks down and Liverpool have then got to win the ball back and go through the whole process again. You know, at the weekend, he was running. You know, he sort of played the game like a teenager. He was running like in a straight line, straight at Harry Maguire. And Maguire, all he had to do was stand up and stand still, and Salah was running into traffic and running into nowhere. Then there was little bits in the second half where he played on the right side and he come up against Luke Shaw, who was brilliant, by the way. He was probably man of the match. And he got Luke Shaw twice inside the 18-yard box, 1v1, where I'm thinking, right, take him on. You can take him on, you can get a penalty, you can produce a little bit of skill. And Mo Salah went back the way and played it safe. And then Liverpool had to start the whole sort of process, the whole move, all over again. And I just think he's going through that period at the minute where he's lacking so much confidence.
Stevie?
Well, I think I summed it up the other day when I said he's fighting with the ball all the time. And I'm 100% with Don. You know, the basics of the game are where you go to, regardless of what position you play. Because everybody has a hard time, regardless of where they play. And so you go back to basics. Salah doesn't seem to have any basics. I mean, if you watch him, when he's passing a ball, he does all the things you tell kids, or if you're a coach, you tell people not to do. You don't pass the ball with your big toe. You don't flick at it. You try and make it move swiftly. You take a good touch and you move it along. Or if you like Salah and you like going at people, then you do it in some sort of fashion. You don't just put your head down and run straight at people. I mean, without knowing where the ball is or what you're going to do, because that's kind of what he's doing. So, a player like him relies on those bits of genius. And when you rely on bits of genius and there's not an awful lot else, then you're in trouble when it disappears. When somebody steals your magic wand, you're not left with an awful lot. And that seems to be what's happening with this guy. His basics aren't there, and so when he can't produce a moment of magic, you don't get too much else.
Mark, we've got, what, a couple of weeks left before the transfer window closes. What's stopping Liverpool going out and getting a defender?
Well, money. There isn't any money there. That's the thing. I think if they're going to get one, it'll be a loan signing or a player that has got a contract situation under the club where they needed to get him out to lower his wages. There's just no money in the game right now. I think if, in an ideal world, they do what they did 3 or 4 years ago with Van Dijk and spend a lot of money on Upamecano at Leipzig, but it's just not going to happen. So they're looking around for a centre-half that's, that, like I say, could be a 6 month loan, a short-term thing, because obviously Van Dijk and Gomez will be back next season, so they don't want to, you know, spend too much on a player that might not play. But that's the problem within the game right now, that it's going to be a very, very quiet January because there's not a lot of money there. But on Salah, I think the one thing I'd be concerned about if I was a Liverpool fan was the fact that he very, very rarely gives interviews. He's very much one of these players that likes to keep his mouth shut. In the last month, I think he's done 2 interviews already, and on each occasion, he's spoken about, well, you know, I'm happy to stay here, but it's up to the club, you know, we'll see. And he's not making the sort of comments that you think are would come from a player that's happy there. And I think, you know, alarm bells are ringing. He's the top scorer in the Premier League right now with 13 goals, but he's not playing well. And has he been distracted? Is his focus somewhere else? It's a difficult one right now, but Salah looks like he's not very happy right now.
Mark, just touching on the money situation, number of times we've put up graphics going, look at the net spend from Liverpool over the last few years and how great it is compared to some of the other sides. They won the league last year, won the Champions League the year before. Why? Surely if any team is going to have a little bit of money in the bank to spend, it should be Liverpool, shouldn't it?
Yeah, but they spend big on wages and they've got to kind of cover that wage bill this season when, you know, every big club is finding it hard to make ends meet because nobody's coming through the gates. I think United and Liverpool are the two clubs that have been hit hardest. They're going to lose about 70, 80 million this season by not having people coming through the gates. They've been hit by, you know, broadcasters having to give money back to broadcasters as rebates. So they're down big money, and you know, when you talk about Champions League earnings, by the end of this season the big clubs like United and Liverpool will be losing maybe £100 million. So that's why there's no money. Clubs don't want to be stretching themselves to bring new players in if they haven't got the money to cover it, and Liverpool have got quite an old squad as well, which doesn't offer much resale value if you look at the average age of the players. So Liverpool have been well running it from a business sense, and they're looking at the squad and the resale value. There's not a lot there, so they haven't got the money to go around.
Right then, Don, here we go. With the Liverpool squad as it stands, what percentage chance do you give them of retaining the league?
Get out. I've got no idea. I'll tell you what I would say is we've got seven teams that seem to be in the title race at the moment.
It's not probably right. Don, 50-50 is probably right.
Listen, I've got no idea. There's seven teams in the title race. I don't believe there is seven. I think it's a three-horse race. I think it's Liverpool.
Don, you just said there are seven teams in the title race. I don't believe it.
No. If you look at the league table, you'll go any one of them seven, potentially, with the points they've got, could win the league. I don't think it's seven. I think it's Man United, Man City and Liverpool.
And who's your favourites, Don?
I think today it's Man City, but that could change in a week's time. That's the way the Premier League is this season.
Manchester City have got a nice run. Dom mentioned Chelsea. For him, not a title contender. It's been a rough road, hasn't it, for Frank Lampard over recent weeks. A massive test for them on Tuesday, taking on a Leicester side who have been excellent so far this season under Brendan Rodgers. We asked you boys for your predictions looking ahead to this game. There we are. Stevie says a Chelsea win, and that's where I want to start, Stevie. What have you seen from Chelsea to suggest they can go to Leicester and take all 3 points?
Well, I'm hanging my hat on the fact that they've just got a victory behind them. You know, winning games is really the antidote to everything.
It wasn't a very good victory, though, was it, Stevie? It wasn't very convincing.
Well, I was just going to say that. Listen, sometimes it's nothing to do with how you play. Sometimes you get in a position where, you know what, I couldn't care less how good or how bad we are, as long as we win, and that starts everything up. And that's basically what I think. I'm surprised that Leicester haven't lost more goals. I'm not so sure about the Fofana Evans partnership, to be honest. I mean, so I think Chelsea are due, and that victory for me, I think, changes it all. And that's why, basically, because if you look at both sides, you know, they score the same amount of goals. They both lost the same amount of goals. So in so many ways, there's not a lot between them. And so I'm going to say that because Chelsea get that victory behind them, they're going to kick on and they're going to take care of Leicester City.
Don, you disagree?
I do. I just can't get a read on Leicester. I think they're a good side. I think when they smashed Man City 5-2, you thought, you know, really, really good side. And they are a good side. But Liverpool beat them. Everton beat them as well. They've lost some big games. So I think what Leicester are, in my opinion, they're a very, very good side to watch. They're a silky side. But I think in the very biggest of games, I don't fancy them. I think they've got a loss or two in them. And Chelsea, as you said, only just scraped by in a 1-0 win against Fulham when Fulham were down to 10 men. So I think a little bit more pain for Chelsea fans to endure, but it might not be the worst point in the world. So if they can get a point against Leicester, don't lose the game, more importantly, try and keep in touch and try and build some momentum.
Where do we stand on Frank Lampard, Mark?
I think the win at the weekend was a big win. I think if they hadn't beaten Fulham, then he would have been in trouble. I think, you know, I know he's a Chelsea legend as a player and everyone likes him at Chelsea, but this is Roman Abramovich we're talking about. And, you know, loyalty doesn't really come to Abramovich when managers aren't delivering, does it? And I think, you know, I remember being at a Leicester-Chelsea game, was it 4 or 5 years ago, when Jose Mourinho was sacked the following day. So if they can sack Jose Mourinho twice, they can certainly sack Frank Lampard. So he needs to... he needs to start winning games. They're becoming cut adrift at the top four, and I think it's all about being in the Champions League. So Leicester away is a tough game. They've got Tottenham coming up, Tottenham away, which again is a big game, that Mourinho factor. So Lampard has to start winning some games, and I think if he gets to the end of the season, he'll have done well if he doesn't get out of this slump they're in right now. And I know they won at the weekend, but it's still a slump for me.
It's going to be a fascinating game, isn't it? Be sure to join us on the next edition of the show. Craig will be joining me to reflect on that big clash between Leicester and Chelsea.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
AC Milan re-established a three-point lead at the top of the Serie A table after a comfortable 2-0 victory away against Cagliari on Monday. Zlatan Ibrahimovic celebrating his first league start of the year with a brace as we welcome in Gab Marcotti and Stuart Robson. Zlatan, eh, Robbo?
He was excellent. He won the penalty. He took the penalty. He showed good pace when he was running in behind. The second goal was superbly finished. He timed his run to perfection just onside, and he made good decisions, and he just brings everybody else into the play. The wide players, I thought, played much better today than they have done in the past. The young players playing out wide, particularly Castillejo. I thought it was a good performance by Milan, but it was also a very good performance by Ibrahimovic.
And a very good performance overall from the team, Gab, considering what they saw Inter do 24 hours earlier.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Inter laid down their marker, and this was Milan's answer. And of course, and it comes without Theo Hernandez, without Çalhanoğlu, without Bennacer in midfield. All three key men for this Milan team, all of them out.
Overall, Robbo, if we're talking about Milan and Inter, who has impressed you more over the last couple of days?
Well, it was against Juventus, so Inter were, I thought, excellent. Most of their decision-making was good. The game plan was right. Everyone played at the top of their game. But you have to also admire Milan because they've come back from a defeat against Juventus when everybody has almost written them off after that, saying that obviously they're going to start to crumble, they're not going to win the title. I thought they showed a lot of authority today in their performance. The three players down the middle of the pitch, Donnarumma, I thought was, again, very composed. He made two good saves near the end of the game. Romagnoli played as well as he has been playing at any time. I thought Kessie was outstanding, and then, of course, Ibrahimovic. So I thought it was an excellent performance by both sides. But Inter at the moment, because it was against Juventus, I thought that was a fantastic display.
Let's take a look at how the newspapers summed up that victory for Inter over Juventus. Gazzetta going with Inter celebrate. Meanwhile, Tutto Sport saying only one Inter. What did you make of the match overall, Robbo? I know you were calling it for the World Feed. Inter were excellent, weren't they?
They were. I thought they got their game plan absolutely right. The two centre forwards didn't sort of chase around. They allowed Danilo and Chiellini to have the ball, and they dropped that little bit deeper to make it compact. And Chiellini and Danilo, when they had the ball, didn't look forward enough. Ronaldo ended up going out into wide areas, which was, I'm not sure why he wanted to do that. Ramsey was ill-disciplined. And the counter-attacking of Inter was excellent. Barella, I thought, was that's as good as I've seen him play. The front two linked up quite well with each other. Brozovic, I know Gav has mentioned before, led in midfield. He picked the right passes at the right time. And Vidal, I picked him out before the game as being a liability. He could go and get himself sent off. But he was outstanding, scored his goal, he closed people down, he did everything that the manager asked of him.
Tactically, what did Pirlo get wrong, Robbo?
Again, when the two wide centre-halves had the ball, it happened in the very first minute of the game. And I hear Pirlo keep saying they played too slowly. It's not so much they played slowly, they didn't play forward. Danilo had the ball in the very first minute of the game, and Morata made a brilliant run. He came short and span in between the centre-halves, and if Danilo had played the ball, Morata would have been in. But Danilo turned away from it, kept possession, and they then couldn't get it into midfield because they were compact in midfield, and Martinez and Lukaku dropped that little bit deeper. So, you know, everyone was saying, well, the midfield players didn't play. Yes, they're absolutely right, but there wasn't too much space for them to play. The ball that they should have been playing was over the top, and Ronaldo should have played next to Morata. I thought, and I'm going to say this, I thought Ronaldo actually bottled it. He didn't want to play up against the three centre-halves. He went out wide into an area where he wasn't going to cause any problems. And when he did cross the ball, who was he going to cross it for? One player against three. It was a poor performance from Ronaldo.
Why is he bottling it, Robert? This is Cristiano Ronaldo.
Because physically, he probably didn't fancy the contest up against Skriniar, against De Vrij. And I think Pirlo said that he went up against Bastoni. He certainly didn't go up against Bastoni. He went out and played in a wide area, and he didn't affect the game at all. He started coming short early on in the game. He kept on losing possession. Then he went into an area where he thought, I can get easy possession. But he didn't make anything happen with it. So I think it was a poor performance from Ronaldo.
Is that something that's been reiterated in Italy as well, Gab?
Yeah, I mean, look, people have pointed it out that Cristiano had a poor game. People have pointed out that, you know, Cristiano also had a poor game before against, you know, there's two outings. He's played at San Siro twice this year, and he hasn't scored. I think there's a little bit of sympathy because obviously Cristiano's bailed Juve out on several occasions this season. But, you know, this was a big game. I'm not quite as critical as Robbo is of Ronaldo. I thought he didn't get the service when he was in the middle. And, you know, I think part of the reason he went out wide was to try and make something happen. When things don't work at Juve, it is part of the culture of the club for individuals, if you've got great individuals, to step up, to take some chances, to take people on. And I think that's what he tried to do. But on the day, it obviously didn't work for him.
We heard Gav and Jurgen Klinsmann on yesterday's show, Robbo, talking about the fact that Pirlo needs time. Do you think, given time, he's going to pull through this?
Yeah, and I also heard your answers. You weren't giving Gav much chance, really, were you? I think
I'd heard them a lot.
He's a young manager. He's inexperienced. I mean, it was a big call to give him the job, but now they've given him the job, they've got to give him time. He's got to learn. I think he made three substitutions for the sake of making substitutions, and it didn't work. He lost the shape of the team completely when they went 2-0 down. He ended up with Bernardeschi at left back because Frabotta had to come off. So I think he made a rash decision there, and he will make rash decisions, and he'll make the wrong decisions. But over the course of time, if he's a good coach, which I'm sure he will be, he'll be okay at Juventus. Don't worry about that.
Why are you sure he will be?
Because I think he's got a football brain. I can see what he's trying to do. I think he's got, in my view, a couple of problems. Ronaldo is a great goal scorer, but he has to play up front and do the job that's asked of him. And I think he has to play, at the moment, he's playing Ramsey, who's another ill-disciplined player that runs here, there and everywhere to try and get involved in the game, but it causes them problems defensively. So there's two players that I think cause Pirlo a problem. If Ronaldo plays up front and plays next to Morata, he's a magnificent player. He'll score goals when crosses come into the box, but make sure he plays up front with Morata. Get an understanding like Lukaku and Martinez have got at Inter.
We talked as well, Robert, about that lack of spark in midfield that Juventus have.
Absolutely. When, you know, I'm a fan of Bentancur, but at the moment he's not playing well. He's not passing the ball well. He's not defending very well. Rabiot, I think, is a runner with the ball, but showed no creativity. And Aaron Ramsey, who's a player that I've watched many, many times over many years, and he's a player that frustrates me. Yes, he'll make runs, but he wants the glory. He wants to go and score goals, but he doesn't do the other side of the game. He doesn't do the defensive side of the game. Pirlo's seen something in him that maybe Maurizio Sarri didn't, but I think he may have to get out the team at some point.
Can we see any new faces coming in during this January transfer window, Gab?
It's a tough one. I mean, they've signed the young playmaker Ovella from Genoa, but the indication is that he's going to stay there till the end of the season. But, I mean, it's the guy's first season in Serie A. He's still a teenager. He is the right profile of player. If the issue is a playmaker in the middle of the park, you know, somebody who can at least pass and hang on to the ball. And I said it last night, I think half jokingly, although apparently there are rumors to this regard. They've been linked to Lucas Torreira, who, of course, had a difficult time at Arsenal last season and has hardly played since going to Atletico Madrid on loan. He's available. He's at least somebody who can pass the ball. For me, midfield remains the single biggest problem that they have. The other areas are potentially fixable. I think that's the kind of profile of player that they'll look for. But the reality is right now, you know, money's tight at Juve in the same way that it's tight everywhere around Europe.
Gentlemen, as always, thank you very much. More from Gab, of course, on the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast. You can download that now. Their special guest, oh, they're desperate, Don Hutchinson. By the way, it is a busy week in Italy. Tomorrow, Coppa Italia, Roma taking on Spezia. That's on ESPN Plus at 3:15. Then on Wednesday in Serie A, Udinese against Atalanta. That's an early game, 9 a.m. on ESPN Plus. Then on ESPN 2, it's the Italian Super Cup, Juventus against Napoli at 2:50. And then on Thursday, Lazio take on Parma in the Coppa Italia. That's at 3:15 on Plus. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. As you can imagine, Athletic Bilbao's victory in the Spanish Super Cup dominates the newspapers front page of AS, Athletic, Marca, Super Goal, Super Champion, different tone in Catalonia. You had it. Mundo Deportivo without faith. Oh, and it's fortune goes with sadness. Messi, of course, getting sent off. We'll come to Messi in a moment, but let's just talk about the overall performance. This is what Ronald Koeman had to say after the game. We're sad and disappointed, but I think we're on the right path. And we're improving. We have to improve defensively. Meanwhile, Antoine Griezmann saying we made mistakes at set plays. We defended poorly. We didn't speak at free kicks. Oh, they're important details. Let's welcome it, shall we, Ali Moreno, to reflect on those quotes. Ali, so they're going in the right direction, but they're losing.
So it's not the right direction. Because if the right direction is moral victories in the Spanish Super Cup against Athletic Club Bilbao, then that's an issue. Look, over the last few weeks, Barcelona has been better. Messi had been better. Antoine Griezmann had been better. And overall, there was a feeling that, you know what, maybe indeed this is the moment in which Barcelona turns the corner. And Frenkie de Jong had better games. And Sergio Busquets had been more consistent. And so there were signs to get a little excited. But throughout all that excitement, we have been saying, hey, look, there are flaws in this team. Even in winning, there's still flaws and things that they have to be much better than what they have been so far. And in a game in which they were not all that great, in a game in which they were pushed around by Athletic Club Bilbao, where there was a certain level of energy and intensity by Bilbao that wasn't there from Barcelona, they were still winning the game 2-1 with a minute to go. All you have to do is defend a set piece and do so properly. And if you do that, you win the game and all the positive momentum continues. Well, they're unable to do that. And in the words of Antoine Griezmann, he's saying, well, we don't speak and we don't communicate in set pieces. Now, that's a problem. Because if you can't do that, as basic as that is, defend a set piece and you win. And instead you have Jordi Alba at the near space somehow ducking out of the way instead of clearing the ball. Antoine Griezmann is late to mark and Villalibre walks in, it's tied 2-2, and from then on I don't think Barcelona had any opportunity because all the momentum was with Athletic Club Bilbao. Let's say that they're moving in the right direction. Well, they're crawling in the right direction. It's not like they're taking huge leaps and bounds just yet. I don't think that losing a final is a step in any sort of direction for Barcelona other than backwards.
What massive conclusion should we jump to that Lionel Messi got his first ever red card in a Barcelona shirt, Ali?
Is that it was a correct call by Gil Manzano, the referee. And there was no doubt about it. Now, does Villalibre get into Lionel Messi? Does he make contact? Was he frustrated throughout the game? Yeah, okay, fine, so be it. But you don't get to just go ahead and hit somebody upside the head with both of your arms just to get them out of the way. It doesn't matter if you're Lionel Messi. It doesn't matter if you're somebody else. He deserved to be red carded. It was a correct call. It was a correct decision by VAR in bringing the referee and saying, you got to take a look at this. And once you take a look at it, it's a red card. So he had it coming in terms of the behavior that he displayed in that particular play. It was a red card. Nothing to see here. And now, more importantly for Barcelona, is for them to argue against the length of the suspension. That's all you can argue against here. You can hope for a shorter suspension than a longer one, but that's it. Lionel Messi deserved to be red carded, no doubt about it.
But overall, Ali, people have been in his face all his career and he hasn't reacted like this.
Yeah, and so when Koeman says in defending Messi, it's like, look, it's a natural reaction for a player who's trying to dribble the ball and he's been fouled time after time after time. I guess it's what you need to say if you're the coach of Lionel Messi, that you're sticking up for your player and you're taking that position, but it is inexcusable. And in the moment in the game in which Barcelona at that point needed Lionel Messi. Now, we can also go into discussion and kind of point the direction Ronald Koeman and say, why is Lionel Messi even on the field at this point? If indeed there was injury concern about Lionel Messi coming into this game, do you really want him to be playing 120 minutes? If indeed he was bringing an injury from the game against Granada that did not allow him to play against Real Sociedad, 120 minutes is the best way to deal with it? I don't think so. I would not have had Lionel Messi on the field in extra time. It would not have been a decision that I would have made. In fact, the moment that we score the second goal and we're winning 2-1 and it's now time to defend and just to see it out, I would have taken Lionel Messi off the field and said, you know what? He's given us as much as he could have given us today because indeed he's carrying an injury. So I don't think he should have been on the field. After he makes a decision to hit Villalibre, of course he should have been red carded. But yeah, there's a certain frustration from Lionel Messi, and it's a frustration that has been going on, had been better over the last couple of weeks, and we had pointed as so, that his play sort of showed us that he was in a better place, that Barcelona was in a better place. But once he got back to a little bit of negativity, a little bit of, oh my goodness, now we're trailing in the game. Oh my goodness, now we're about to lose this final that we should have won. We saw once again the frustration come out. And I just don't think it's just because of this game that Lionel Messi was frustrated. I think it's a frustration that is bubbling and it's always there. It's an undercurrent. And when things like this happen, it's easier to point the finger and say, you know what, this guy's not quite right just yet.
Why is Koeman prioritizing this game over La Liga, Ali? It seems strange. You mentioned 120 minutes for Messi. Surely you play him for an hour. He clearly wasn't 100% fit. Bring him off and then focus on La Liga.
Well, of course, and mind you, they have Copa del Rey coming, so you would have actually gotten even more rest out of Lionel Messi. And you also have to have the idea that PSG is looming somewhere in the future, that Champions League is indeed a reality for you. And what I think, and the only conclusion that you can reach here is, Ronald Koeman looks at the possibilities of Barcelona winning something this year, and the more likely scenario, the most likely trophy that they were going to win was indeed this one. It was the Supercopa de España that in any other season would have been dismissed as, yeah, you know, that's minor trophy.
Yep.
That's glorified exhibition. Yes, and that's glorified exhibition. That's okay. Is it really a trophy? Is it not a trophy? Indeed, at times it was treated as a preseason game more so than anything else. But in this case, I think Ronald Koeman is saying, I don't know that we're going to win anything else.
I don't know that it's realistic for us to think, okay, is La Liga a potential title for us? I don't think so. Maybe Copa del Rey still out there. Is Champions League realistic? I don't think so. So where is that trophy going to come from? And when you think of Barcelona and the fact that they haven't won anything in as long as they have, then you say, oh, maybe this became a priority because there is not going to be another chance. There's not going to be another opportunity. And I don't think that my team, and this is Ronald Koeman speaking, I don't think my team is strong enough to win these other things. So therefore, here was a trophy that we could have won, and therefore, I am going to take this chance here with Lionel Messi. I would not have done that if I'm Ronald Koeman, and in the end, one way or the other, Lionel Messi is going to be absent for a few games.
Barcelona, meanwhile, of course, third favourite to win La Liga behind Real Madrid and Atletico Madrid. Bad news for Atleti today is FIFA have upheld that ban that was initially given out to Kieran Trippier. 9 matches he will miss, Ali. How does this affect Atleti's status as favourites to win the title?
Yeah, I think big picture, I don't know that it really affects Atletico Madrid that much in La Liga because of potentially the lead that they may have. And I also do think that this sort of appeal, counter appeal, the feeling is that Atletico Madrid is going to appeal this to a higher court and that we're just going to try to delay this as much as they possibly can so that Kevin Trippier could be available for a longer period of time that they would have had him otherwise. I don't know that this process has ended just yet. Yes, this was a somewhat of a final decision, but you can appeal that. And in that process, I think Atletico Madrid is going to try to extend it so that at least they can have him available through Champions League. Once they get past Champions League, they may just say, okay, fine, we'll take the suspension and we'll make do with whatever we have available. But given the lead that they have in La Liga, I think that they're going to be just fine.
Ali Moreno, as always, thank you very much. What a ridiculous ban it seems to be. Just a reminder, if you ever miss any editions of our show, you can download our daily podcast, which is available over on the website. Haaland, De Bruyne, Stevian Shepherd-Pie, Shaka and Naps, all great teammates. But what's the perfect teammate for growing your business? Well, that's Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify makes it easy for you to show up exactly the way you want to. Customize your online store to your style with gorgeous, flexible templates and powerful tools. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Plus, Shopify's extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/FC. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/FC now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/FC. It proved to be a pretty perfect weekend for Bayern Munich in the Bundesliga. They would beat Freiburg by 2-1. Leipzig, Leverkusen, Borussia Dortmund, all rubbish, all dropping points, solidifying Bayern's place as favourites to go on and win the title. As we welcome in Casey Keller and Steve Cherundolo to the show. Steve, we were talking to Jurgen Klinsmann yesterday about Bayern just overall. And he was saying it's just a blip. They're just a bit tired. It's nothing really to concern yourselves too much about regarding not only the domestic title, but also their pursuit to defend the Champions League. Do you agree? Do you think this is just a blip?
I agree on the first part of that. I think for the domestic league, the Bundesliga, I think they'll be just fine. They're showing fatigue. And anytime you can win games and play poorly, that's a for sure sign of experience in a championship squad. Which is the opposite of what we've seen in the contenders. But in the Champions League, I do feel like the back line of Bayern may be suspect to go all the way again. But having that said, back-to-back Champions League titles is extremely difficult and rare. And that would just be Bayern pulling a rabbit out of the hat.
What do you think, Casey?
Yeah, I think it's Bayern's to lose simply because anybody who could contend just isn't in the form that they need to be in to challenge Bayern Munich. I mean, when Gladbach come back and take all 3 points from Bayern, and Gladbach then go on a little bit of a run, 2 in a row, and then they slip up in the 96th minute to draw. Leverkusen lose to Union. You know, Wolfsburg and Leipzig, you know, another draw. Dortmund get that big win against Leipzig, and you think, okay, have they turned the corner now? Haaland back in form. Haaland scores after 6 minutes, and then it's called off for marginally offside, and it just, they never really got going against Mainz. And so it really looks like, you know, Bayern will get better. There's no question about it. They have gone through a blip. But then I agree with Steve wholeheartedly on the Champions League side. Defensively, I just don't think they're going to be able to repeat and win another Champions League.
Meanwhile, for Borussia Dortmund, a really disappointing result against Mainz. Obviously, they had the chance to win it. Michael Royce putting that penalty wide. Steve, he can never take another penalty, surely, again, for Dortmund.
Well, he is their captain, so, and I know Marco Reus has had a fantastic career, and he showed that he can score penalties in the past. But surely, in this critical stage, and after that miss, it really is emotionally a big miss for him and the club. So I don't anticipate him taking the next ones, especially if you have one of the hottest forward in all of Europe playing right next to you. I assume that Erling Haaland will take the next penalty and the penalties to come.
Yeah, that seems to make sense, doesn't it, Casey?
Yeah, very much. But first of all, I want to congratulate my former teammate Bo Svensson for getting his first point for Mainz as the new manager. And it was something that I think Mainz deserved. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, look, Dortmund were great the first half. Second half, Mainz really caused him trouble. And not only did Royce miss the penalty, but it could have gotten worse. Mainz could have found a winner late in that match. So yeah, Dortmund will rue missing the penalty, but also, if you wanted to look at it a different way, they're also in some ways maybe fortunate to even getting a point out of it. But we're still waiting, I think, for Dortmund to recapture the form that we've seen a few months ago where they were really rolling over opponents, and it's not quite there yet. But yes, I fully expect a new penalty taker at Borussia Dortmund.
Meanwhile, Schalke couldn't make it back-to-back victories, losing 3-1 against Eintracht Frankfurt. Jovic with a brace in that game. But from an American perspective, it was quite something, wasn't it, Steve, to see Matthew Hoppe scoring another goal off the back of that hat-trick. It's quite a story.
Incredible story. And I was watching that play. I watched the game and I said, well, no, this is going to turn out to be nothing. Keeper's coming out, or the defender's there to clear it. And sure enough, he did not lose hope, as many good goal scorers do. They just kind of sniff it out and see the play out and finish his run. And next to the finish, I know Casey can talk more about the finish, but anytime you strike the ball, put your foot through it and down towards the keeper's legs, in between his legs, just to the side, left or right of him, it's very difficult to save. Really a classic finish. And at this point, it's his fourth good finish in a row. We have to say he's a good finisher. There's no longer luck in my book.
What does Casey know about finishes?
Well, I've seen a lot of them go past me, so I have a little bit. But no, I think what I really also liked about a young 19-year-old is you look at the way he curved his run before he even made it to make sure that he stayed onside. That's something that you don't see from young players. Sometimes that's something that takes time to learn, and he also did that in the match against Hoffenheim. I thought he timed his runs extremely well. So he's got that understanding, but also the belief. He has the endeavor as well. He works extremely hard for the side. I still understand why Schalke are looking to bring in Huntelaar. They're looking for some more experience. I'm not sure that they're going to stay up from Matthew Hoppe goals. I hope so, but he's going to need some help. But I think he's really put himself in an excellent position going forward. And now it's just a matter of continuing on. I'm not going to say that he's going to score every match, but to really be consistently scoring every other game, every third game, something like that will go a long way for this young kid that completely, you know, jumped into everybody's consciousness out of nowhere.
Klaas-Jan Huntelaar will be returning to Schalke, Steve. Ajax letting him go on a free. So what are you hearing? Is it a case that Huntelaar will come in and start straight away, or will Hoppe be able to compete?
Well, I think he will be able to compete, and I don't think at this point we can rule out both of them playing side by side. I think that could work as well, but it would mean a new role for Matthew Hoppe to get used to, a new role in the squad. and not just being that lone forward up top. So it would be new for both. And it would, I think it would actually help him out immensely, because most of the attraction from the defenders will logically go to a man like Huntelaar. And Matthew could find himself alone quite often and get himself on the scoring board more often.
Let's continue to talk about strikers. One that you know very well, Casey, Jordan Morris. This really surprised me. Linked to a move to Swansea City, who, of course, at the moment are in the second tier of English football. That's quite, what word am I looking at? It's going to be a massive test for him if he makes that move, isn't it? Because Championship football is tough.
Yeah.
No, and I think that if you look at it kind of inside a little bit, and it surprised me as well, being even, you know, obviously a Sounders fan and an employee, it kind of came out of the blue as well. But when you have Kaplan, kind of the majority owner at Swansea, who also owns DC United, you have Peter Tomazawa, the president of business ops at the Sounders, who I'm not sure if he still is, but at one stage was a minority owner of Swansea. So there is some connection there between the clubs. And, you know, Jordan's 26. This is an opportunity for him to see if he can, you know, take his game to that next level. And surprising, yes, because MLS for years was very adamant that they were not going to sell players to lower division clubs. But I think as we're seeing this end of the expansion money that goes to the clubs, and that MLS needs to start balancing the books by selling more players. And here's an opportunity. Well, and also we know that MLS, you know, took a hard financial hit, you know, with COVID, and an opportunity for the Sounders to maybe balance the books a little bit, you know, going into this next year. But the evolution of Jordan Morris's game is going to be through that competitiveness, through that battling, and no better place to do it than the English Championship to see if he can improve that side of his game.
But Steve, if I was his agent, if I was Jordan, I would say, look, just phone around the Bundesliga just to make sure. But because for me, I would much prefer to go and play in the top division in Germany than grinding it out in the Championship, where we know the intensity, we know the number of matches, and we know how quickly you're judged.
I agree. I think I think there was some interest from the Bundesliga as well, as there still may be. And I see it this way. I think Jordan is one of many in the Championship in England, and in the Bundesliga, he would be one of very few. He'd be kind of like a diamond in the rough. He's strong. He's just like a bull. And getting at defenders, and I think he has enough pace in him. Well, not enough, just extremely a great amount of pace to really flourish and to stick out in the Bundesliga, because there aren't too many forwards like him running around the league. And that's where I believe it would be maybe better for his career, and it would better suit him, because he would be more effective in the Bundesliga than he would in the Championship.
Great stuff, guys. As always, thank you very much. There's a full midweek round of Bundesliga matches on Tuesday. Borussia Mönchengladbach taking on Werder Bremen. It's Bayer Leverkusen against Borussia Dortmund. Then on Wednesday, Augsburg against Bayern Munich. And Leipzig play host to Union Berlin.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Doubleheader from England for you tomorrow. Derby County against Bournemouth in the Championship. That's at 1 p.m. Eastern on Plus. Followed by the FA Cup tie between Southampton and Shrewsbury Town. Meanwhile, later today or earlier tomorrow in the A-League, Central Coast taking on Western Sydney. That is also here on Plus. That's it then. That brings us to the end of today's show. Be sure to stay tuned though. Extra Time is next. Mark and Don back with us, as is Stevie and his new Air Buds. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you, as always, for your tweets. Don Hutchison is here, as is Stevie Nicol. Mark Ogden here with us as well. Mark, first question is for you. Why aren't we seeing anything happen in the transfer window? Is the biggest news really going to be Dembele or Mesut Ozil?
It is all about money. As I said before, the pandemic has really affected clubs' finances. All the big clubs are looking to lose between 80 to 100 million this year, so they can't afford to go out and buy players in this window, especially when they don't know when the pandemic's going to end. I mean, you know, nobody knows. It could be next season before they get fans back in. So I think it's all about worrying about the income streams, and they haven't got the money to spend.
Ah, well, we talked about this next question on the show. Tell me why Liverpool not signing a centre-back. Mark made the point that there is no money. Need Henderson and Fabinho in midfield where they belong. Don, you want Socrates from Arsenal. You said this would be brilliant.
I didn't say it would be brilliant. I said it would be a decent signing, would provide cover for Matip. I think he knows the game. Jürgen knows him from Dortmund days. I'm not saying he's an amazing centre-half, but I don't buy the argument. Mark was saying before about Liverpool have got no money. I don't buy that argument with Liverpool. You know, when you think of what they've done over the last couple of years, a couple of Champions League finals, lost one, won one, Super Cup champions, World Cup champions, Premier League champions. Now, surely they've got 46 million euros, which I believe is the buyout clause for Upamecano from RB Leipzig. Sure, Liverpool, at this moment in time, have got that sort of money to spend on a young, up-and-coming centre-half. So, I just think if Liverpool are deadly serious, and Jürgen's deadly serious about retaining the title, surely he's got to be backed in this window and go and get him a top-class centre-off. Or someone like Sokratis, which you'll get on a free. Or someone like Connor Cody from Wolves, that wouldn't cost the earth. There's got to be players out there that Jurgen Klopp could bring in.
Umekano, that release fee doesn't kick into the summer. And Cody's got to be at least 50 million, isn't he, Don? Where are you living? An English defender, English international defender, he's not cheap.
No, he's not cheap. But like Mark said, in a pandemic, Connor Cody, 50 million? I don't think he's that. I think you get him out of there for 30, something like that.
But they don't have any money, Don.
Of course they've got money. That's why they've got money.
Don, Don says you're talking nonsense. They've got money.
Well, I mean, they spent £60 million in the summer on Thiago and Diogo Jota, so that is a big chunk of it. And like I said earlier, they haven't really got many players they can sell. In terms of resale value, they haven't got anyone they can cut in the summer. You know, Wijnaldum, his contract's going to run down in the summer. They're going to have to replace him. So they're probably looking at the long game, thinking, if Wijnaldum goes, we need an extra midfielder. The midfielders they've got are all in, you know, pushing mid to late 20s. So I suppose a lot revolves on what happens in Mo Salah. If Mo Salah in the summer becomes a saleable asset, then Liverpool can think about spending some money. But right now, they haven't got the money.
Don, do you think Alexander-Arnold is not as good as we thought he was?
Wow, I mean, that's harsh. I mean, the kids had, a couple of bad games? Stevie had at least 100 of them.
Wow.
I mean, Trent's only had a couple of bad games, hasn't he? I mean, that's a bit harsh. Gone early there. Who's that, T? Gone early.
Stevie?
No, I don't. I don't think he's anything other than what we thought he was. We all know that defensively, that's where his problems are. You know, this bad run that Liverpool are on, pretty much all the games have been, you know, he's been putting balls into penalty boxes that have had, a dozen to 15 players in it. So it's not quite as easy as he certainly made it look previously, but that doesn't mean that all of a sudden he's not as good as we thought he was. Listen, he's not having the best of times. He still deserves to be on the field. I wouldn't say he's not as good as we thought he is. Yes, he is. He delivers great balls. And actually, his job is to get the ball in the box. In my opinion, it's about forwards making runs and filling the gaps and getting on the end of stuff.
Stevie, how important do you guys think that the squad competition really is? Luke Shaw seems to have become so much better since Man United signed Alex Telles.
100%. Absolutely. Listen, players figure out how or where they are. Players figure out if there's any chance that somebody else is going to get out in front of them. And if they come up with a no, and there's nobody in the squad that's going to push them or replace them, then it becomes easy for somebody to, not down tools, but maybe just don't play with that same edge. So when you've got somebody, when you look over your shoulder and there's somebody pushing you, it gives you that extra little edge, it pushes you that little bit further. So yes, it's absolutely important.
Don?
Same, especially when you talk Man United. Do you think there's a good battle between Lindelof and Bailly for the extra spot. You think Bruno Fernandes is coming in the door and, you know, changed the whole dynamic and the whole feeling of Man United's midfield. So then Paul Pogba's upped his game. So I don't think there's any coincidence. If you've got competition for places, you certainly play better and you try harder.
Since Wayne Rooney, Mark, has announced his retirement this past week, what is your favourite Rooney moment?
Wow. A lot of Rooney goals. I think the one that stands out for me is the overhead kick against Man City in 2010 or 2011. I know he kind of shinned it a little bit, but it was still quite a spectacular goal and a big moment in a big title race that season. So I'd go for that goal, the shinned overhead kick.
Your paths must have crossed, Don, at some stage, yeah?
No, Wayne, I think, would have been a baby when I was at Everton. But I just like the fact that it gives young kids hope, because Wayne was a street footballer. He just got plucked off the street. He had a different physique than anyone else. He was mean. He was horrible even at 16, 17. And I just think it gives all kids around the country, around the world, a chance to look at someone who's not traditionally built like Ronaldo and think that you've got a chance. And Wayne, you know, was a very, very underrated player. I think we think and we talk about legends too easy. But I think when you sit back and you kick back and you talk about the greats that have played in the Premier League, he has to come into the conversation.
I don't think he's underrated, is he, Don?
No, but I don't think he gets the mentions when people say, oh, who's the greatest Premier League player ever? And they go very easily, Thierry Henry. Or they go, Didier Drogba. The names seem to come off the list, off the tongue, sorry, very, very easily. But when you sit back and you think what Wayne's done for club and country, I mean, an unbelievable player.
I think because Rooney's bright spots were probably when he was 19, 20, 21. People forget what a great player he was. And he won, I think, 5 Premier Leagues, a Champions League, England's all-time top scorer, Man United's all-time top scorer, FA Cup, League Cup, Europa League. He won everything, did everything. But because he didn't quite become, you know, England's Lionel Messi because of the way he started in Portugal in 2004, people think that he didn't fulfil his potential. But, you know, look at his record. And Don's right. The record that he has outshines all of those players you mentioned, the Henrys, the Drogbas, you know. He really was a great player. It's just unfortunate that the best of it was when he was so young. But, I mean, fantastic career.
Don, does Jovic scoring on his debut for Frankfurt mean that Zidane is a bad coach or simply that he didn't fit in?
I don't think Zidane's a bad coach. I mean, how can you say that? I just didn't think he fitted in there. It might have just been too big for him. Real Madrid's a massive football club and he might have felt a little bit inferior. I think Eintracht Frankfurt's a good fit for him. He's got Filip Kostic there, a fellow Serbian. So he goes straight back in at the team at the weekend, scores a couple of goals inside 15 minutes. And some players are like that, Dan. Some players can go to a big club, not hit it off, go back to their former club or a different club and just hit the ground running. And I think it'd be great back again for Eintracht Frankfurt. I thought it was a good signing at the time. You know, him and Haller were scoring bundles of goals at Eintracht when Haller left for West Ham and he went to Real Madrid. It just didn't work out for him.
Stevie, this always fascinates me and it's something we've talked about before, because you've seen strikers who are banging in goals for clubs who weren't as big as Liverpool come to Liverpool and struggle, because you think in theory, surely you would score more goals because you've got a better supporting cast around you.
Yeah, Don touched on it. It's all about mentality. Absolutely. It's all about mentality. And you know, people throw like the X factor out about players, and as far as Jovic, his ability in the penalty box should have been absolutely perfect for Real Madrid, and I thought it would be as well. And there is absolutely no other reason for this guy not to succeed there than the fact that mentally he can't handle the pressure of a big club day in and day out. And playing for a team like Real Madrid and Liverpool, it's an everyday at your best situation. Mm. It's not a turn up on a Saturday. It's about what you do every single day, because every single time you pull the jersey on for real, you're expected to have a level of performance. And some players just either think about it too much, it's too much for them, and it's all between their ears. It's absolutely a mentality.
Mark, what do you think of Phil Neville into Miami? Do you see him bringing in another big name?
I think it's a good move for Phil Neville. I think, you know, he's done the England women's job for a few years now. I think he's probably got to the end of the road there. He's wanted to be a manager for quite a while. He's been a coach under David Moyes a little bit. You know, it's a big step. Phil Neville has to go there and kind of defend himself against the accusations that he's got the job because one of his best mates is the owner of Miami, David Beckham. So, but I've always been told that Phil Neville's a good coach, the players like him, so it's a good chance for him. But again, it's going to be difficult for him to prove that he got it on his merit, on his own merits, rather than because of who he knew.
What's going to shock him the most about coaching in MLS, Stevie?
Everything that surprises you has got nothing to do with actually what happens on the field in MLS, to be honest with you. Listen, the coaching-wise, regardless of the level of the player, it's the same. You know, what you want your players to be doing is the same when you get on the field, whether it's training or playing. It's all the other stuff. It's all the rules and what you can and can't do as far as try to bring players in, as far as coming up with an idea. You know, it's not just a free-for-all. You come up with something you want to. I'll give you an example. So I decided to try and bring a Liverpool reserve centre-back. This is way back in the, you know, in the mid-2000s. I decided that, you know what, why don't I try and bring in this young kid who was playing centre-back for Liverpool reserves. He was an American, I can't remember his name off the top of my head. I thought that was a great idea. So I went to my director of football. He called the league. The league said I couldn't do it because of my connections with Liverpool, it gave the Revs an advantage that wasn't fair to the rest of the league.
Sounds fair. No. Sounds fair.
I mean, how much? Honestly. So that was, I mean, and again, as a coach, you're going, what? It's unfair to the rest of the teams in the league, and that's what I was told. So it's all these sort of things that are going to throw. But if he concentrates on just what he has and how he has to organise them, the way he has to do it, because of the ability that they have or the certain type of players they have, if he concentrates on that, he'll be fine. But if he starts thinking and worrying about all the other stuff that goes on, then that's what's going to hurt him. Not the fact that he can coach or not.
Stevie, I just noticed this. Have you got wireless earpods in? That's a first, isn't it?
Well, big time now, isn't it?
Look at
I'm
that.
I'm moving on. Technology. I'm catching up with technology, isn't it? Do you want the truth?
Yeah, go on.
Do you want the truth? The truth is, we went the other day and changed the phones. And I got home and I was going to put my earphones in and I went to plug in the thing and there was nowhere on the phone to plug it in, so I had no choice.
Hey, looks good, Stevie. No, what is flapping about?
Big time.
You don't even have to hold your phone anymore. You could just put it behind you on the shelf.
Still in his hand. Still in his hand.
Thinking. Oh, what's that?
Look, there you
still
go.
Still got it in my hand.
Look, go try it. Put it on the shelf.
Dan, I'm a creature of habit.
So he can't do it.
Not happening.
Don, how hard is it to play without fans?
I have no idea. I've not done it apart from pre-season games. I think I'd be terrible, Dan.
Seriously.
I watch the games and I try and wonder what I would be like with no fans in the stadium. I don't think I'd be any good. I was terrible in pre-season games. I really was. When there's no jeopardy on the games, I couldn't get adrenaline, I couldn't get the emotion. You get the humour, you get all of that when fans are in the stadium, you get the colour. And, you know, sometimes before a game when you might be feeling a little bit under the weather and you go down the tunnel and you hear the atmosphere and it just brings the adrenaline right out of you and you feel as though you can get up for any single game. And I used to be terrible in pre-season. Honestly, I really was. When there's no jeopardy on the game, I was like, oh, it doesn't count, doesn't matter. And I used to just try, but I ended up just being sloppy in my passing and just giving the ball away and not having any conviction in what I was doing. So I think it's doubly hard for the players at the minute with no fans in.
So what was your excuses when you played like that during the season?
It was a mentality that the clubs were too big that I played for.
Final question. Stevie, what was your favourite thing about the best city in the world? Sheffield.
Oh, what a city.
I used to go and watch the snooker when it was there.
Ah, the Crucible.
It was fantastic.
Fantastic. Very good.
Yes.
Don, you got obviously links for Sheffield as well.
Yeah, played for Sheffield. Great city. Some good sports bars. But like Stevie said, when the world champs come around and you got tickets for the Crucible, which is just around the corner, it's a lovely city as well, Sheffield.
Oh, there we go. What a lovely positive way to end. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Congratulations, Stevie, on getting into the 21st century. What could possibly go wrong?
Thank you.
We'll be back tomorrow to talk at Chelsea-Leicester.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They're the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at LectricEbikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.